Welcome back to the Lars Resort with me, Lars Stevenson, brought to you by Bets On. We crack on, we carry on. There's been another day of Euros action, and I do think, I've said it a few times and it's not always come off, but I do think this will be, at long last, a slightly shorter episode, because it was one of those days where I felt, by and large, this trend of the slightly tepid match day twos, or certainly the match day twos being significantly less exciting than the first round of games, that is kind of continuing for all the reasons we discussed in the last episode. Though first up was Slovakia versus Ukraine, and here the stakes obviously were higher because Ukraine really, really, really needed to do something. And it ended up being a bit of a theme, I thought, of today, is that it was kind of a little bit of redemption for the dark horses. The dark horses, which had such a bad time on the first, you know, my two dark horses anyway. I picked Austria, and to a slightly lesser but similar extent, Ukraine. And then Austria lost to France, and Ukraine got thumped by the much dissed Romanians in the first round. This was very embarrassing for me. But some redemption here for Ukraine, who got their win, but really, they weren't convincing in this game either, I have to say. Certainly the first half, Slovakia held on really, really well. And in fairness, we did speak about this before the tournament, that Slovakia are not terrible, and they've got, particularly their midfield, a lot of experience there from a good club level. I thought it was funny with Martin Keown on co-coms here in England. I think everyone's still, like, emotionally hungover from watching England just kind of be so terrible. So Keown was remarking in the first half of this that, you know, the teams that are doing well, they seems to be the one that have midfields who know what to do. He said, sort of looking jealously at the sort of Lobotka, Duda, Kuchka trio, who were much more coherent than England's midfield. And really, like, Stanislav Lobotka would very clearly improve the English midfield by quite a lot. If you played him instead of Trent there, I think that would be much better. Anyway, we need to get back into it. We spent about 4 hours talking about that last night. Slovakia, really creditable performance. And Ukraine took a while to really kind of get this going. Mudryk continues to be just a remarkably frustrating player. It's the same as it has been for Chelsea this season. He has skill. He has this tremendous burst of speed. But my word, there are so many, like, bad decisions and bad deliveries. And, you know, that could be, like, on a bingo card of some kind, or a drinking game. Whenever Mudryk, like, makes a decision with the ball in terms of who to pass to or when to shoot and what to do, that is clearly not smart. Everyone has to have a drink. You'd need the ambulance on standby for that one, unfortunately. I still kind of think Mudryk might come good at some point. Like, the raw talent is there, but he has some growing up to do, and needs to, his game intelligence could be better. Slovakia took the lead in the 17th minute, so pretty early in this half, really. They went one up with Ivan Schranz from Slavia Prague, who scored in the first goal as well. But I thought this was all about the sort of clever cross thing that Lukas Haraslin sent in, also from Sparta Praha. Haraslin looks pretty decent. Again, I kind of wrote off all of Slovakia's front line just because they didn't play in any big leagues, but I think Haraslin is not terrible. He's 28, though, and playing in Slavia Praha, so not sure he'll get picked up by anyone, but he's had some good moments. And Ukraine went into the halftime, I'm guessing, feeling pretty low, like they didn't achieve much in the game. It was another one where they created almost no chances in that first half and looked disjointed. We're not a good team at all. But they came out with a little bit more urgency, I thought, in the second half. They get the 1-1, which, as much as I was kind of hard on Mudryk, it was kind of his sort of bursting forward run that eventually led to the 1-1. It was kind of a botched counterattack that they eventually managed to turn into a good scoring chance. And it was kind of like the opposite, or it was a similar effect to the Romania game, where Romania scored a goal and it certainly completely lifted the team. I thought we saw similar stuff here, where they got the goal, Ukraine kind of grew a couple of inches and looked more confident and became more and more assertive in the game. I thought they were notably better after the goal. Didn't create huge chances, but looked better. That Slovakia may be tiring a little bit. Like, as much as that sort of midfield is low-key decent, it's also real old with Duda and Kuchka. Like, these are some pretty old dudes. So I thought they were getting tired a little bit in the half, Slovakia becoming deeper. And I wasn't massively surprised to see Ukraine get a winner, but I was surprised to see who had come from. Yaremchuk, of all people, who even the mild-mannered Andy Brassel was quite snarky about on the pod the other day. Do you remember that? Like, Andy's not snarky about a lot of people. He's a very kind man who sees the best in everyone. But he was pretty sharp about Yaremchuk for a reason, because Yaremchuk has really struggled in club football the last few years. And actually, yeah, let's talk about Roman Yaremchuk a little bit. It's that kind of night. We have time for that. Yaremchuk kind of is most remembered, I guess, from Euro 2020, where he scored some goals for Ukraine, which, of course, as you'll remember, was played in the summer of 2021. He'd played for Ghent that season, had a decent goal-scoring return, 17 goals in the 28 starts for Ghent, and a few goals at the Euros. So, you know, Benfica paid a pretty solid amount of money for him. Not a success at Benfica. You know, 13 starts, 10 off the bench, 6 goals, which doesn't sound terrible, but again, Benfica, he looked out of place there. He was a very blunt instrument in a team that's kind of looking for a little bit more. Moved to Belgium, to Club Brugge, also for a pretty chunky transfer fee, certainly a big, like, 16 million euro or something, like a significant sum of money for a Belgian club to spend on a guy. Not a success in Club Brugge. Started just 9, came off the bench 14 times, scored 2 goals in his season for Club Brugge. Not amazing. So he ended up moving on to Valencia, which is where he was last season, where he had 11 starts, 14 off the bench, 3 goals. So Roman Yaremchuk clearly has not had a great time at club level since that very fine summer of 2021 when he played well for Ukraine at the Euros. And he is someone who, I believe, he's had a rough time with, you know, the war has really affected, I mean, the war has affected everyone. He's saying the war has affected everyone in that squad, but I guess people kind of take it differently. And there was a whole thing about how he became really depressed and lost a lot of weight, which is not so good. So, but the reason I'm saying all this is that it's such a strange case of, here's this guy who for the last few years has been really not good at club level and not scoring goals and not living up to his transfer fees and yada, yada, yada. And then you have Dovbyk, who is the reigning La Liga top scorer. Now, if you watch them, you'd think it'd be the other way around. Like, as Dovbyk has been kind of sluggish and looked like a bit of a non-entity in both of the games for Ukraine, and both times when Yaremchuk has come on, he's looked much sharper. You remember, he almost scored. I mean, one of the few bright spots for Ukraine in that game against Romania was Yaremchuk nearly scoring a very deft finish. And then he comes up here and scores a lovely finish, the way he takes that ball and pokes it past the goalkeeper. Wonderful stuff. So again, it is funny how you get these guys who just come alive on the international stage and seem to look like much better players for their countries than they do at club level, and vice versa with some other guys. It's fascinating. Anyway, Ukraine kind of dropped off a little bit after 2-1. Slovenia almost got back into the game. But as tempting as it is for me to just go, yeah, I told you, it's a dark horse, they are not actually that bad, and they weren't that good in this game, like, I'm not going to claim. And they are now in a situation where they'll need to get something against Belgium, and if they're going to do that, they're going to have to improve a lot, because even though they lost, I think Belgium played reasonably well in their first game, and got the win without convincing at all. Hopefully that win will kind of give them a better feeling. It did look, as we talked about, like they suffered with the occasion of it all when they went down against Romania. Perhaps like the mental state of this team is a little bit fragile, maybe. Again, you can't really judge any of that, and you couldn't judge them if it was the case, given everything that's going on. But hopefully that win will have boosted them sufficiently that they can put up a good fight against Belgium, because I do really want to see them progress and at least see them play closer to the full potential of the squad, which I still feel like we haven't really seen yet, even though they won this game. Austria-Poland. Now, Austria were just brilliant in the beginning. Like, they were so good in the beginning of this game. High tempo, the pressing, they won the ball back quickly, they moved the ball well. You can hear Andras Townsend, who was on the co-commentator duties here, and he's quite good, Andras Townsend. I know he's still an active player, but he's quite good at talking about the game as well. He's going to make a fine pundit when he properly retires, I think. He was really, like, giddy is a bit strong, but he was super impressed. He was like, wow, this is super good. And I think one of the reasons, like, the first 20 minutes or so of this was so, like, affecting when you watched it, is that Austria looked more like a club side than I think maybe any other team in the tournament. And we spoke about that in the run-up. We were kind of expecting it. So many of these guys have gone to the same academies, essentially, or been through clubs who work in very similar ways. So they know what's expected of them. They're probably less affected by the sort of international footballitis, this problem of the players not seeing each other that often and not knowing each other that well. I think a lot of these Austrian guys, they understand each other pretty well and know sort of the system better than quite a lot of the other teams here. And really, the first 20 minutes, Poland were clearly not very good, but I thought they looked a lot like a very good club team the way they played. So that was very impressive. But then they kind of dropped off a bit. In the game. They got their lead, of course, and when they got their first goal after like 9 minutes, was it? It felt like this could be a proper rout because Poland were not looking good. But as the game went on, they dropped off and let Poland back into the game. Poland got an equalizer, and frankly, Poland looked like the stronger team going into halftime. And it made me think about, like, as thrilling as the beginning of that game was, and as happy as I am to have some vindication, at least having one of my dark horses do something good, I do wonder about their approach, this sort of high-energy Red Bull Ragnik style of doing things. How viable is that at international level during these summer tournaments when everyone has a full season in their legs, and it's like, is that something you can do? You certainly can't do it for 90 minutes every game, so you need to deal with what happens in the game when you have to sort of sit back a little bit. And certainly, I don't think they dealt super well with Poland making their way back into the game. The second half, I've written here in my notes, game not as engaging as it was in the beginning of the first. Austria do have more quality, but Poles are doing a reasonable job frustrating them, is kind of how I felt. I guess that will have been kind of midway into the second half or something. I wrote that down because Austria were, again, the better team in the second half. They had the ball a little bit more, I think. They certainly generated more chances. But for a while, until they got the 2-1 goal, it did kind of feel like this game could go anywhere. Like, they were vulnerable to the counter because they do commit quite a lot of men forward. And they weren't kind of steamrolling them? Yeah. That kind of works, doesn't it? They weren't bowling them over. Let's go with that, in the way they did in the first 20. But when they do get the 2-1 goal, I kind of felt like the air kind of went out of Poland a little bit. And we had some things we were expecting to see here, like Arnautovic, who magnificently was on the field and played for 80 minutes. So he's still got some Arnautovic. He's still got the legs. He got booked for just pushing a guy for no reason. That's absolutely what I expect from Arnautovic. In the same way I'm expecting Shaqiri to just score a wonder goal at some point, I am expecting a rogue Arnautovic booking for no reason at all. We had a moment where, like, Lewandowski was trying to dribble everyone on his own. It's like, yeah, no, that seems like a metaphor for something. And the sort of superior quality that Austria have compared to Poland, it did show itself. You know, the 2-1 goal was a very well-worked goal. Nice sort of sweeping passing move. Very clever decoy run by Arnautovic, actually. And Austria, while not as lively in the second half, again, yeah, the quality they had was clear. They were a better team than Poland. And really the move for the penalty that results in the 3-1 was very cleverly worked as well. So they can do some clever stuff. And yeah, Arnautovic bagging the penalty, love that. It's just like, it's one of those things we've got to have. Arnautovic turning up at these tournaments, it's part and parcel of it. It's the culture. It's what we want to see. Again, just like Shaqiri and a few other things. It just wouldn't quite be the Euros without it. I guess it won't be the next time. He'll be 39 next time the Euros come around, Arnautovic. I'm guessing he won't be around by then. Anyway, Austria got the job done and were markedly better than Poland and were very good in brief periods. And we'll see what they can do against the Dutch in the last game, because the Dutch, which we're getting to, the Dutch, I thought, were much improved against France, even though that was a super different type of game. Like, weirdly for the Dutch, they looked a lot more comfortable, I thought, sitting back a bit and trying to hit France on the counter than they did when they were trying to unpick Poland. I kind of thought that looked like it suited this team more, which kind of surprises me a little bit. But no, the Dutch were kind of surprisingly well organized, I thought, in this game and dealt with France as a very, very difficult opponent, dealt with them really well. Again, the first 20 minutes of this game was great, had a good tempo, both teams kind of doing stuff. Some big chances for France, we'll get to that. N'Golo Kanté looking really brilliant throughout the game, that was one thing to notice. It's been a bit of a mixed bag with these guys who've gone off to the Saudi League. Some have, like Sega Milinkovic-Savic, has really not been good for Serbia. Mitrovic has kind of not been as sharp as you're expecting to see him. So some of these guys you've seen that they've not been at their best, but Kanté certainly has been has been keeping trim and is looking in great shape. And there's a vintage Kante stuff today, I thought. And it was a good game in the beginning. It's easy to forget that because it then gradually petered out. It descended into not a good game. The game just kind of settled, and it settled more and more, I thought, as the game went on. And the game was noticeably slower in the second half, and you started focusing on things like, I don't know, Memphis and his really dumb sweatband, where it says, "I don't care" on the back. Did I say that earlier? He has a sweatband around his head where it says, "I don't care" on the back, which is like, well, we know you don't care, Memphis. You've played like you don't care for a very long time. You don't necessarily need to tell everyone. Anyway, the game was not amazing. Holland got a goal against the run of play that was ruled out for offside, and the game just kind of died completely after that, which is a shame because it started well, but it became really boring. Both teams looked like they were kind of okay-ish with a draw here, no one risking too much, and it goes back to what our friend Dave mentioned in the last episode. Should we call it the Dave Mitchell problem? That seems a bit harsh. Sounds like it's his fault. But yeah, the Dave Mitchell problem is that on match day two, too many teams are just kind of okay with a draw. Both teams end up on 4 points. For the Dutch, it means that if they get a point or a win against Austria, they finish second. So that's not a bad spot for them to be in going into the last game. France know that they just need to beat Poland by more than whatever the Dutch manage against Austria, which is probably a good place for France to be as well. I mean, beating Poland should be very manageable for them. And I mean, the Dutch could have risked more and go for a group win here, but then they risk getting done by France in the counter. And then the Austria game suddenly becomes a little bit more precarious, because unless I've gotten my permutations wrong here, since Austria beat Poland by more goals than the Dutch, if the Dutch had lost here, that would mean that like a draw against Austria would send the Dutch third. So that would make that game a little bit more iffy for them. So a point here suited the Dutch just fine. They didn't have much of an incentive to do much, and the French, again, pretty happy with where things stood. So I guess this is what we get in a tournament where like a bunch of the third place teams go through as well, so there's even less jeopardy. And yeah, I don't want to be too negative, because I am broadly speaking enjoying the tournament. Like, the first round of games was just great. There were very few boring games, but the second round there's been a few sort of meh. Some of that might be tournament fatigue on my part, but I really do think I can still identify a decent game of football when I see it. And like, the first 20 minutes of Austria-Poland were tremendous, and I think the first 15-20 of this was entertaining as well. It just kind of died off a little bit again. Teams a little bit too happy to take a point. It's kind of funny how we have, there's such a thing as Euro lore, tournament lore, for these sort of summer tournaments. There's some debates and discussions that we just have to have. Like, Shaqiri has to turn up and look a little bit chunky but still score a billion goal. Like, that has to happen. We have to have the Morata discussion. That has to turn up at some point. And I see now on social media during this game that people were starting to get angry about Didier Deschamps being too defensive, and I'm like, yes, we did it, another one. It's like, we should make a bingo card for this stuff, like, or at least like a three across. Then we need 9 things for that to work, with like discourses and complaints and incidents that you have to have at a major tournament, and at least at a European Championship. There's a fair... Send them in to Lars Iversen on Twitter. There's been another one, like fans from the Balkans getting in trouble because of things they chant. That's a solid like Euro bingo card thing. Like, that's happened now. The Croatians and the Albanians were singing mean things about the Serbians. There must be loads more of these things. But yeah, Deschamps is Deschamps. We talked about him with Andy. He knows the score. He knows the situation France are in. He's not going to risk more than he has to, especially with Mbappe not available. So it is what it is. And also, I was going to do this thing of looking at the bracket. Like, what's at stake in terms of finishing first or second? And it doesn't even make that big of a difference. The winner of Group D, which is this one, they face the runner-up from Group F. So Turkey, Czechia, maybe Georgia, most likely Turkey or Czechia. Whereas the runner-up here faces the runner-up from Group E. So that's the Romania, Ukraine, Belgium, Slovakia group, which is a complete toss-up now. Like, that group is looking very open. You could get really unlucky and bump into Belgium there, the way this has panned out. But either way, that's not like a huge sort of... Some of the other groups are, if you finish runners-up, you bump into one of the really strong group winners. So you really want to avoid it. But that isn't the case in the France-Netherlands group. Anyway, tomorrow, the Georgians are back. God bless them, the Georgians are back. They play against the curiously Nordic Czechs. I worry for the Georgians here a little bit, because I think part of the reason the Georgia-Turkey game was so much fun was that both teams were a bit chaotic and disorganized, whereas as we saw from the Czechs, they were like a Nordic team in disguise. They were Scandinavians in disguise. They had a lot of tall boys, and they all knew where to stand. That was kind of it. That's what they were doing. And I do wonder that sort of rigid organization might end up undoing the Georgians somehow. They were also quite direct when they attacked, and the Georgians did end up with some odd defensive positioning and some strange openings. And I don't know. We'll see. Really hoping for Georgia for another brave performance by the Georgians against a not bad, but just slightly charmless Czech Republic team. I think on, like, completely objectively, the Czechs are a better team, I'm sure, but just in terms of the expected fun, there's a big difference between these two teams based on what I've seen before and in the first games here. We got Turkey versus Portugal. Think this could be an easier game for Portugal again, because I'm expecting Turkey. They have more talent, you'd say, than Czechia, but I think they're less organized, and I think that helps for Portugal when they're trying to attack. They really did struggle to break down Czechia. I think they'll struggle less to break down Turkey, but then, of course, Turkey have more stuff that can hurt them down the other way, and I guess we're all excited to watch Arda Güler again after some of the stuff he was doing in the goal, in particular against Georgia. Lastly, we got Belgium-Romania, which is now a very interesting game. So much more interesting than I thought it was going to be, because, of course, Romania had that sort of shock result and super impressive performance, really, much better than we thought they had in them, against Ukraine. And Belgium were not terrible. I've heard some people be sniffy about the Belgians. I didn't think they were that bad. They just didn't kick the ball into the goal. They've put themselves in a bit of a stinky spot in the group. They really need to do something. So it'll be interesting to see whether Romania have kind of turned back into a pumpkin, or whether they were actually just really good and we were all wrong about them. That could be true. We will learn more about that tomorrow. Goal scorer boosts. I mean, I've been putting it off, guys, but I'm starting to think this feature is cursed. Because, again, I don't think, based on that game, I would defend Griezmann as a pick here. Not only did he have massive chances, but he had exactly the kind of chances I thought he would have. There was, like, more than one chance when he made a run into the box, and no midfielder from Holland kind of tracked him, and he had a shooting chance, and it went wrong. And then he had the one from Rabiot that came slightly behind him, and he kind of fell over. I don't know, man. He really should have scored. In the same way that Lukaku really should have scored, in the same way that Mitrovic rattled one off the crossbar. I mean, I don't know. It's just been that kind of week for me. It turns out I'm just cursing people when I pick them. So tomorrow we're going for Cristiano Ronaldo. And that's not a joke. We are actually doing that. And I called this in before the Griezmann pick. But since I'm pretty happy with this, because I kind of did this through gritted teeth. We need a win now. And I just think, because Turkey are quite chaotic, I think he'll have decent working conditions. And again, he took five shots in the first game, or five finishes at least. So he is the guy everyone looks for at Portugal. Maybe to the detriment of the team. I mean, we can have a conversation about that tomorrow night, kind of depending on how it goes. But there were moments of that Portugal-Czechia game when I started thinking, you know what? If these Portuguese players weren't constantly looking for Ronaldo, or instead started just looking for the teammate who's in the best position, like regardless of whether it's Ronaldo or not, I think this team would play better football. But anyway, he's still there. Everything is going towards him, and he had five finishes in the first game against a not super well-organized Turkey. At least that's what they were against Georgia. I think if Mikel Tadze had that many openings to do something, surely Cristiano Ronaldo, the old but very ripped Cristiano Ronaldo, should be able to get some chances. Or possibly I've jinxed him again. I can live with that. If that happens, you know what? That's fine. Okay. Well, not the shortest episode after all. Maybe I should just stop saying that. Just give up completely. They are as long as they want to be, guys. And thanks for listening to another one. There'll be more pod tomorrow. And I believe tomorrow we might have even better football than we had today. That is my belief, and I'm sticking to it. Talk to you later.